7 0 4 5 8 3 9 5 0 4 5 8 3 9 5 0 4 5 8 7 0
6 7 times.
Welcome to the Insomnia Stream. Southern African Princess Edition. Or South African Princess Edition, not Southern African. I am tired. Hope you guys caught. I was on with Mark Collette earlier today. And check that out on his channels on Odyssey. I'm always surprised at who still streams on DLive. When he gave me the links, I was like, DLive, really? Like who's still over there? I guess there's some people are still over there. DLive, they came crawling back. Please, no one watches DLive. Ever since we kicked the racist out, no one comes to DLive anymore. Well, fuck you, DLive. Anyway, yeah, pretty kind of a chill one. A little bit. Oh, I don't know about chill. A little laid back. We mentioned South Africa in that stream, or at least Mark did. He mentioned that Elon Musk tweeted out something about South Africa's white genocide, but then, of course, ended the tweet with, and they won't even let me sell Starlink over there because I'm a white guy. And then it sort of took all the oomph out of, like, you mentioning white genocide. It's like, really? So really what you're really mad about is you can't sell Starlink in South Africa. Like that's, let's just face it. And then everyone's geeking out because I guess Trump retweeted it. And they're like, oh my God, base Trump. He finally retweeted Elon Musk mentioning white genocide. And it's like, okay. All right. Well, yeah. Did he draw a Q with his hand when he was when he was moving it around? I gotta move my pop filter as I breathe on the microphone. Anyway, yeah, sorry. It's been a long day. I've been out in the sun a lot today too, can you tell? As per usual, if you want to send super chats, you can go to entropystream.live/app/ or maybe just /DevinStack for you guys. I don't know. Or just go and you should see it. That's how we're doing it right now. You can also go to Subscribestar and become a supporter over there, as many of you have, which I really appreciate. I almost never mention Subscribestar, but it's there. Yeah. All right. Well, without further ado, basically what I wanted to talk about tonight is a Disney special. A Disney special released in, well, aired on, I think, the Disney Channel in the year 2000. Featuring communist Americans, putting them in a good light, and putting white South Africans, of course, in a bad light, and breaking it down in terms that little children watching the Disney Channel could understand, with this wonderful piece called The Colors of Friendship. Isn't that a beautiful name? It's The Colors of Friendship. You know, it's stunning to me how many of these things, we'll never run out of these things. The right made basically zero movies like this for decades. Well, I mean, it continues today. We will never run out of left-wing propaganda put out on major outlets like the Disney Channel never run out of it. It's endless. And the right? Zero. Zero. I mean, to the extent that any kind of quasi-conservative anything gets produced, it's limited release. It sucks, which is why it's limited. I mean, if it was awesome, it would get picked up. Hollywood Jews like making money. So it always sucks, to the extent that it ever happens, which is almost never. It sucks. It gets passed around on, it's like basically production value is horrible. The acting's terrible. The writing's bad. Everything about it sucks. And then the only people that watch it are basically the people you don't need to reach. It's just grift. It's like Christian rock. Like no one's listening to that unless they're already into that stuff. Anyway, it pisses me off because you watch this stuff and it's just like, fuck, it's like there's so many of these fucking things. They cover every fucking topic and they do it. They saturate the market with this stuff. And the right does nothing. Fucking nothing. Now, look, the actual right wingers. We're not the ones printing money. I get it. Okay, I get it. But for fuck's sake. I'll tell you what. That shows you how fucking desperate right-wingers are. Oh my God! A billionaire said the words white genocide in a tweet! Yeah, wake me up when Elon is funding movies about white genocide, where the bad people in the movies are black people killing white people. Wake me up when that happens. Or no, don't even wake me up when that happens. Wake me up when there's like 50 movies like that. Wake me up when they're like on television all over the, saturating every outlet, streaming services. Oh, wait, that'll never happen? Anyway. Yeah, well, hopefully South Africa starts supporting Israel and letting Elon sell Starlink, or you might have to hear, he might tweet about it some more. Anyway, so this starts out, like I said, this came out in the year 2000, but it's not set in the year 2000. It's set in 1977. See, another sign of the times, and this is obviously recorded from television. And you like how on the bottom it's all transmitido in Espanol and SAP. It's like already in the year 2000, networks were having to tell all the, there were so many fucking Mexicans in the country. Hey, look, you can hit the I'm a Mexican button on your TV and it'll start giving you the Spanish translation. Because, as long as we're telling everyone to hate white people, we might as well tell the Mexicans, too, in their own language. It's a little sign of the times there. Year 2000. Already. Transmito en Español! Anyway. Washington, D.C., 1977. There's the White House. And you're going around looking at all these different sites. And then it cuts to this family who I presume lives in Washington, D.C. They look like the Cosbys, though. They're like they're really well-off black people listening to music. And then they suddenly change the music because they see their father driving home in his expensive car.
Hi, Daddy. traffic was pretty bad on Georgia Avenue. So, what's new?
How was your day?
Long. 3 subcommittee meetings and a White House luncheon. Pass the lemonade, please. What's that I hear?
Good drums, Daddy. African tribal drums from Senegal.
No. I thought maybe I heard someone knocking. Guess not. And you have something on your face. Wipe it off.
Daddy?
Daddy?
Tell me she's not back on that student exchange kick again.
I told you it wouldn't work.
Please, Daddy, we're running out of time.
Piper, we've talked about
it. I'm just saying if the drums are going to drive you crazy.
If the deadline's tomorrow, then it's over. We'll forever lose our opportunity to enrich our lives and forge a kinship and bond between our black African brothers and sisters.
Don't look at me. It's her words. And I think you made your point, so give the Senegal drummers a break. Give me your bowl.
Yeah, that's about as much as I could take, too. So she wants to go on this, she wants this to participate in an exchange program. Have some African kid come live with them and celebrate their blackness. All very acceptable things in the United States. You can be very racially conscious in the year 2000 if you're black. In fact, it's celebrated. Even shows like The Cosby Show that sought to convince white people with little exposure to black people that black people were essentially white people with darker skin. Even The Cosby Show from time to time would go for this black power stuff, you know, dressing some of the characters up like Africans and talking about their heritage and all this nonsense. So she's telling her dad, who is based on a real character, or a real person in real life, who we'll go into in a moment. She says, Daddy, we need to have an African move in here. And he's not feeling it until his wife gives him the business.
Maybe it would be good to have an African student in the house. Sort of shorten the cultural divide between black Americans and black Africans.
Am I hearing it's fine with me?
As long as you understand, this kid is your responsibility. I don't have time to babysit.
Thank you, Daddy. Thank you so much. I knew you'd come around. Man, I wonder what she'll look like or what country she'll be coming from.
Yeah, I wonder. Like, you guys probably already know what's going to happen, but anyway. Meanwhile, in Dundee, South Africa. You know, we go through this little wormhole over to Dundee, South Africa, and we meet her counterpart.
So you're going to tell him, right? Tonight, you tell him I can go.
I can't tell your father anything, Maury. We'll discuss it, and as always, he'll decide what's best. No, I think I'll start with a green salad.
Discussing, telling, whatever you want to call it, he listens to you. If you say you don't mind, then it's as good as done.
Perhaps. What would you like, Ria?
I don't want vegetables.
She asked you what you wanted, not what you didn't want, dumb cop.
There he is!
Dad, over here!
Hi, Dad.
Hey, Ria.
He's smiling. That's a good sign.
Hello.
Hello, Peter.
Hey, Maury.
Hi, Dad.
Good news?
We caught him.
Who?
Stephen Biko.
The black agitator.
Not anymore. He's now sitting in jail in Durban.
Fucking based. So who he's talking about is Stephen Biko. Stephen Biko was a black activist, black power activist in South Africa at the time. Remember, this is supposed to be 1977. And he is arrested in 1977 for being a subversive. He was a communist. And we'll get to that in a moment, what happens. But so that's based on, you know, something that was going on at the time in South Africa. And smartly dressed, based fascist South African cop is celebrating his arrest with his family.
Who's Stephen Biko?
A black troublemaker. He's always rousing and stirring up things, just like you.
He violated the ban by traveling outside his area.
Well done. Now maybe our poor country can get a little peace.
And what are we having? I've worked up an appetite. What's going on?
Going on? Nothing's going on. Maury wants to go to America on some dumb student exchange program, but she's afraid to ask you because you might say no. So she wants Mother to do it for her.
Student exchange program? When did this come up?
About a week ago, the school headmaster sent the paperwork out.
To America?
Yes, Dad. Wouldn't that be exciting? The United States. Plus, extra credit will be given to those who go and attend a foreign school.
What do you think of this?
Mum thinks it's great. She didn't say it was great. She said it sounded interesting. You have one life to live. Don't push it. Plus, the headmaster said traveling abroad will make it easier to get into a university. Maybe even a full tuition and...
You think this is a good idea?
Well, she's never been out of South Africa before, and she is a little young.
Yeah. Well, that's what I think.
Dun, dun, dun. Oh, no, she's not going to be able to go to America and learn all these wonderful ideas that were in America. But until the wife, just like with the, you know, we're all the same, right? We're all just slaves to our wives telling us what to do. So, of course, he relents and allows his daughter to sign up for the exchange program and go to America. But then you see little kids at home. They have no idea what's going on. They're just little kids at home watching this show about South Africa. They've never heard of South Africa. And they just say, oh, these people seem Britishy and polite and nice. And what's going on? So they make sure that all the little kids at home know what it's like in South Africa.
Excuse me, boss.
Bloody kaffir! Let me help you. Come. All right.
We're gonna have to clip that. We're gonna have to clip the bloody kaffir thing.
Bloody kaffir!
We're definitely gonna have to clip that. All right. So we got that going on. Oh my goodness. Apparently they're like, I guess this is mostly American audience, obviously. And so they're watching this and the kids at home are thinking, wow, that's a mean old white guys over there. They're so mean to the, what's a kaffir? I don't know. That sounds bad. So a little white girl goes home and she starts telling her slave, because I guess they have a slave, exactly what her plans are to go to America. And the slave is actually pretty excited about this.
I think going to America will be good for you.
Do you? Why?
I don't know. Little things I have had.
Like what?
They think differently over there.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's like Apple. Think different. In other words, go to America so they can fill your head with bad ideas that are wrong for you. But anyway, meanwhile, back in America, land of the free, home of the brave, because, you know, American children are like, oh, yeah, we do. We don't kick black people and then call them kaffir, whatever the fuck that was about. Yeah, we need to educate these stupid South Africans about black people. I mean, don't they know? Black people are awesome.
All I can tell you is that there are serious problems in South Africa between the blacks and the whites. You know about apartheid?
Apartheid?
Right. Just think of the word...
That's right, you stupid cracker. Let the black man explain it to you. What's apartheid? That little kid, that little white boy, he's the viewer at home. Because in the year 2000, here's the other element of this, if you really want to think about who the audience is. In the year 2000, who had the Disney Channel? The Disney Channel was still a pay channel in the year 2000. And so, not only is the audience limited to upper, well, maybe not upper, but I'd say middle class. Not everyone had cable by the year 2000. I'd say a lot of people had cable by the year 2000, but not everyone. And the Disney Channel was often a channel you had to pay extra for. So now you've really kind of dramatically focused the audience on the demographic. Really, is little white kids. It's little upper middle class white kids. Little upper middle class white kids that would later go on to grow up to be, well, the millennials and well, I guess it'd be, if it's the year 2000, pretty much millennials and to some, like, I don't know where the borderline for Zoomers is, but I guess you'd, like, Zoomers were born in the year 2000. Isn't that where it starts, the year 2000? So not really Zoomers. So, or younger millennials watching this and then growing up to become Antifa members.
Apartheid?
Right. Just think of the word apart.
Like keeping people apart from each other, the blacks and the whites. The blacks aren't happy because they're treated pretty badly.
The blacks aren't happy because they're kept away from the white people. So again, this is no different than all, like, we just did a stream on segregation and all the same arguments apply. All the same logic applies. If it's not unfair to the white people to keep them away from the black people, why is it unfair to keep, or to the black people to keep them away from the white people? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense that for the white people, it's good to be separate and amongst their own. And yet, it's this horrendous evil for the black people. Unless, of course, there's something about proximity to black people that's bad, and proximity to white people that's good. In which case, that should support the argument for apartheid. Because otherwise, look, it's literally, at that point, it's a civil rights issue. Forcing white people to be around a type of person that's at best a degradation of their civilization, at worst, dangerous. I mean, think of it this way. If it was literally any other kind of pairing, the UN would step in and say, no, you can't end apartheid. Like, if it wasn't blacks and whites, if it was any other two groups, they'd say, no, you can't mix these two. Because then it would be dangerous for the group that isn't murdering everybody. Anyway. You can tell I'm tired. I didn't articulate that in the best way, but you get what I'm saying. You get what I'm saying. If it's such a horrible crime against blacks to be around themselves, what kind of a crime is it to force other people to be around them? And but when you're a little kid, you don't know, especially in the year 2000, you've been basically mainlining MLK speeches since age 6, and you hear this sort of thing, and this sounds horrifying to you. What? They want to separate blacks and white? I heard that's horrible, like what the Nazis did. Meanwhile, back at the plantation, you know, they go to great lengths to make this look like some kind of southern plantation that she lives on with her slave. And the little boy, he's caught a bird and put it in a cage, and she does her magic Negro, you know, the wise old black woman speech about birds and how we should all just learn from the birds.
I used to watch them build their nests, giant baskets as tall as a man. Inside of them, there were many smaller nests where they would raise their families.
Like a village.
Yes, and there were many different colors. Red, and some were black, and others were yellow. I would watch them for hours. Think at how they worked together, helped each other. Never did I see them fight. would wonder why people could not be more like them.
I wonder why they can't be more like... Because we're not fucking birds. Maybe that's why. Because we're not fucking birds. Hey, look, I found this thing in nature. I found this thing in nature. If only we were like this thing in nature. Really? Really? You found this thing in... You realize that black widows kill their mates and then lay eggs in their corpses so that the babies, when they're born, can devour their father. Like, oh, we should do that. monkeys, when they're mad, they shit in their hands and then fling the shit. We should be more like the monkeys. More like the monkeys. See, this other aspect of American culture that I think really a lot of people, and even today, you still sort of see this worship of nature. And look, it clicks with white people. White people like nature. I like nature. Look, I talk about bees all the time, right? I get the animal metaphor. I get why you do it. Because people do like those metaphors. They like to think about animals. Well, white people do. And they like to think about how other beings exist and how their social hierarchies are. And maybe there is something to be learned. But I always talk about how bees' behavior can be compared to human behavior. I never say, we should be more like the bees. We should be more, you know what we should do? We should live in a matriarchal society, and just the men, all they do is they're there to impregnate the queen and then die immediately. Beyond that, we're useless. While the women run the rest of the colony and do everything. Yeah. Yeah. We're not fucking animals. We're not birds, which is kind of funny because...
Because people are not birds, Flora. The things you say sometimes.
You fucking dumb... Anyway. So she's kind of based. She's like, okay. All right, whatever, Flora. So then she's getting ready to go to America. And then her brother comes running up because he's found some kind of flag.
Where did you get that?
What? The flag, donkey. What are you doing with it?
I found it. What's wrong with it?
It's the flag of the South African troublemakers. That's what's wrong with it.
Give it to me.
Father will thump you good if he catches you with it.
How's I supposed to know? It was just lying in the street.
What was lying in the street?
Nothing.
The fascist dad, luckily, doesn't find out about the black communist flag that the son found. But the black slave, the house slave, Mammy gets the flag and she puts it in her little secret box of black power propaganda and then takes out of her box a article about the California congressman who's leading the fight against apartheid in South Africa. And this is the black man that was featured in the first part of the movie, and it's based on a real guy. So the real guy, his name is Ron Dellums, and he was, I'm not just calling him a communist because he was a leftist, he was openly a communist. He was openly a communist. He was, to the degree, he was on Nixon's enemy list. he was literally a communist. He was I think he started out as the mayor of Oakland. Was it the mayor of Oakland? Yeah, he was the mayor of Oakland. He was the mayor of Oakland later in life. He started out as in the House of Representatives from Oakland. And that's the family that's the black family that's in this movie. This situation never happened. Like the him getting a white South African exchange student But he did exist. He was a representative, and he was agitating for the end of apartheid. According to Wikipedia here, it says, in 1972, Dellens began his campaign to end the apartheid policies of South Africa. 14 years later, the U.S. House of Representatives passed Dellums anti-apartheid legislation calling for a trade restriction against South Africa and immediate divestment by American corporations. This was basically the economic sanctions that would lead to the end of apartheid, or at least part of that. The bill, the Comprehensive Anti-Apartheid Act of 1986, had broad bipartisan support. So Republicans and Democrats supported the bill by the black communist because, you know, who wants to be called a racist? It called for sanctions against South Africa and stated preconditions for lifting the sanctions, including the release of all political prisoners. You know, political prisoners meaning black terrorists. So you had both sides of the aisle campaigning against South Africa, trying to enforce sanctions and economic sanctions against them. And President Reagan, you know, good old based Reagan, called for a policy of constructive engagement. But he did veto the bill, at least. His veto was overridden, so it didn't really matter. So that should show you the support that it had in Congress. And my sense is Reagan knew that it was that's the kind of support that it had, and so his veto was symbolic. He knew it would be overridden. He knew that it really wouldn't matter. So pretty much the entire American political establishment was anti-apartheid and instrumental in enforcing the end of apartheid in South Africa. So there you go. Anyway, so that's the context. That's the black family. And she's like, oh yeah, you know, base Dellum, he's gonna help us poor black people here in South Africa.
My point is, black South African babies die at a rate 13 times higher than white babies. Lack of jobs, inadequate housing, chronic food shortages are everyday occurrences in a...
Got a deadline. Good speech, Congressman.
Yeah, as always.
Thank you.
How come more people didn't show up? Don't they know this stuff is really important?
Not important enough.
Well, it was a good speech anyway.
And I can always say, I had to shout to be heard.
Oh, yeah, it was so hard. It was so hard to be heard on this topic. This topic that I just explained had so much bipartisan support that they overrode a veto. And not only that, you had all of Hollywood attacking South Africa. And you might remember this. This is from Lethal Weapon 2.
Mr. Jones?
Right.
Sit down, please. Well, what can I do for you today?
Okay, I have this problem, this very delicate matter. I have a friend of mine who wants to emigrate to South Africa.
Yes, of course. I can certainly help him do that.
Oh, sure. But I want you to talk him out of it.
Talk him out of it?
Yeah.
Whatever for?
Well, you see, this is such a bad time for him to go to South Africa. I mean, with all the trouble and everything, okay?
Oh, look, why don't you ask your friend to come back later in the week? We can sit down.
He's here. He's here.
He's here?
Yeah, he's here now.
Where?
Alphonse.
How you doing?
I think there must be some mistake.
Say what?
Sir, listen to your friend here. He knows what he's talking about. I don't think you really want to go to South Africa.
Why not?
Because you're black.
You are. He is.
Of course I'm black. That's why I want to go to South Africa. to join up with my oppressed brothers, to take up the struggle against the tyranny of the racist, fascist, white minority regime.
Fascist, white regime.
One man, one vote.
One man, one vote.
Free South Africa, you dumb son of a bitch.
You dumb son of a bitch.
Look, I've heard just about as much as I want.
Hey,
I'm going to ask both.
Hey, what's happening here?
Yeah, it was so hard. It was so hard to get your message out with all of Hollywood behind you, every little outlet in terms of propaganda coming from Jews or just communists generally. Yeah, it was at your disposal 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. In fact, the only thing Americans really knew about South Africa was that they were racist. That's all they knew. Most Americans had never been to South Africa or didn't know anyone from South Africa, and that's all they knew about was, oh, South Africa. That's like the hillbilly racist white people that live in Africa. So the white South African girl arrives in America, and the black family, expecting her to be black, can't find her anywhere.
We were expecting a passenger on this flight. And their name?
Mari Bach.
I'm Mari Bach.
Oh, no. That can't be her.
Oh, no. Not a filthy fucking racist white South African. Oh, no. What are we going to do? Womp, womp.
Well, how many Mari Bachs could there be on one airplane?
But she's white.
Oh, no. The horror. She's white. So they pick her up. She's under the impression that these black people are the slaves of the senator, because she realizes that she's going to be staying with the senator, but she hasn't looked up to see that he's black. And so she's being nice and friendly and telling them, oh, why don't you go get my luggage, you fucking kaffirs? And they're like, oh, what? And then she learns the hard way. She walks into the senator's office and is met with penetrating stares.
Please tell me that's not her.
Oh no, it's a white girl. Tell me that's not her. Oh my God. And she immediately realizes, wait a second, I think I relaxed. See, the fucked up thing about this scene is you're supposed to watch this and just expect that this would be normal, but it doesn't really make any sense at all. It doesn't make any sense unless you're, what you're saying is that black people don't like white people. Because that's what it would mean if you shot a scene where there was a bunch of white guys in suits sitting around a boardroom table. They were, I guess they work for the government in some way. You know, one of them's a senator. And then the senator's wife comes in with a little black girl or a little black boy. And then the whole room suddenly gets deathly quiet and they all just stare at the little kid. Like he's going to do something? What would that mean? If you watch that scene in a movie, the impression you would want, oh, wow, those guys are a bunch of fucking racists. Look at that. It's just some harmless black kid walks into the room and just there, ooh, who's this? We don't serve your kind, you know, like, but yet, little kids at home watching this, what I highly suspect that the white guilt is such, even at that early age, when you're watching a show like this on Disney Channel, you feel the penetrating stare. That stare, that look, that looks at you just as much as it's at her. Because the little white kids at home, it's like any time you watch a movie, or some people that aren't as, well, I was going to say, it's stupid people when they watch sports. you're living vicariously through the main character, right? You're always looking to find a character that you relate to, and you're somehow, in some way, maybe not to a crazy degree, but in some way, you're projecting yourself onto that character and living their experience vicariously. That's why people like movies so much. And that's also why the people serving you movies like that you like movies that way so much. And it's in this case, the little white kids, who we've already established that's the audience. You got the upper middle class white kids whose parents paid for Disney Channel. So they're not really exactly, they're the type of boomer parents that are letting the TV raise their kids on top of that. So you have all these little white kids at home watching TV. And who are they putting themselves in the shoes of in this situation? This little white girl. And they're looking at these black guys, just stare at her like she's done something wrong just for existing. And it really kind of sets the tone. It really kind of sets the tone. And you're not, in no way is this shot in a way that would give a child or anyone really the impression that these are bad people, that they're bad for looking at her, for being, you know, oh, look at all these. You know, again, like I said, if you were to race swap this out, you would say, wow, the impression I get from watching this scene is that that's a room full of racist people. Well, they've shot it in such almost the same way they would have shot it with white people, but culturally they've already managed to shift people's perceptions so much that just that you get the opposite impression that she's still the bad one, even though she's a child in a room full of adults. She's the racist. And so she's uncomfortable and she's looking around like, oh, shit. And she finally realizes that, indeed, did I get the wrong screenshot? No, I didn't. I got ahead of myself. She realizes that he is actually the person he's going to be staying with, and she's freaked out. So when they get back to his place, the family, of course, is still expecting some black African to show up. And when she walks in the door, they're very shocked that it's a white girl. And same thing goes. If you had made this movie and shot it exactly the same, had the exact same scenario, had a bunch of white kids getting ready to welcome a kid from Scotland, as an example, into their home as an exchange student, and then the kid from Scotland ends up being black, and they all make these faces, the impression that you would get is, oh, they're all racist. They're all look at the racist kids. But the propaganda is so thick. You watch this and none of the white kids at home are thinking anything negative about these black people for having this reaction. If anything, they're thinking that there's something wrong with her. So she gets upset. She's so blindsided by this situation that she runs upstairs and locks herself in a room. The mother tries to get her to get out of the room and she won't leave. And then that night, when everyone's in bed, she goes to call her parents to tell them that, you know, this is not cool. They put me with a black family. But because her dad answers the phone and she doesn't want her dad to think that, because he suspected that she wouldn't last very long in America and she'd want to come home right away and was giving her a hard time about it. And so because her dad was saying that, she lies and says, oh no, everything's fine, everything's great, because she doesn't want her dad to be right. The husband is also very upset. He doesn't want a white racist little girl in his house. Oh, I should probably unmute it though, so you can hear it. Here we go.
Sweetheart, listen to me. I have been fighting bigotry my whole life, both here and overseas. It goes against everything I'm about to have a racist white South African living in my house.
That's right. Fucking racist. And the daughter is equally pissed off, and even though she's brought food, I think it's funny that the little black girl knows how to pick locks already and breaking an entry.
I've locked myself into my room enough times to learn how to get back in. You do drink chocolate, don't you? Or maybe you only like vanilla.
Oh, take that, racist. Or maybe you only like vanilla. Speaking of vanilla, you like how the super black dad has like the lightest skinned daughter they could possibly have cast for that part? Don't think that's not intentional. Oh, look, she's at least 50% genetically white. At least. So after, you know, the really sick burn of, or maybe you only like vanilla, she decides that, you know, or I guess I am being just a racist bitch. I'll stick around.
What do you know? It is.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, you should be.
You should be, you dirty fucking white racist. Because you've literally done nothing except for exist. Like that's it. You came to America expecting what most people would expect. Not just a white South African chick. Anyone would expect. I mean, how many members of Congress were black at the time, like 3. So, you know, you find out you're going to America in the 70s, especially, you expect the American family that's going to be the host family to be white. They're not. You don't really do anything. You're just freaked out by black people, as you should be, especially if you're from South Africa. And so you're that's it. That's all she's done is been like nervous about it. But she's the bitch. She's the bitch. But they finally get along and become friends because, you know, I don't know, it's the Disney Channel. Meanwhile, the dad is still pissed off.
Wait, when I left...
What was I supposed to say, Rom? No, I'm sorry, but we don't allow white South Africans in our house?
Would that have been so terrible?
Yes.
No, I think terrible is how she's treated us.
Would you keep your voice down? She might hear you.
It's about time somebody listened to me. What's that?
It's her application. I had the exchange office send it over. Maybe it'll give us a clue to help us understand her better.
Well, you want a clue? Nationality, South African, race, white. End of mystery.
Oh. She's got one brother about Eric's age. Her mother's a housewife and... her father's a policeman.
You're kidding. Roscoe.
Oh, come on,
Roscoe. Her father is a South African cop. That's like being a Jew and inviting the Gestapo over for laughs.
Oy vey.
We knew it was only a matter of time before the Holocaust came up. We knew it was only a matter of time. Eventually, you had to have the Holocaust in there somewhere. So, her dad must be evil. Because, you know, blacks hate cops, and if there's anything they really hate, it's a white South African cop. That's like the worst kind of cop. So he's mad because her dad works in law enforcement, and which inevitably means he has to arrest black people because they can't obey laws. And he flips the fuck out because he doesn't want the racist little girl, the racist little white devil spawn in his home.
There is nothing complicated about racism, Roscoe. It's wrong.
You're right. It is wrong. But if we have an opportunity to correct it, shouldn't we? Don't we have that obligation to our children?
Our children aren't racist.
Yes, but that's just because we made an effort to teach them not to be.
Oh, yes. You know what's odd about that, too? Is she's basically saying that the natural state of all humans is to be racist. That the only reason why her children aren't racist is because they were propagandized by their parents not to be racist. That's an odd way of putting it. That the only reason why, they're inaccurate, by the way, the only reason why their children aren't racist is because their parents taught them not to be. That had they not taught them that, the natural default setting would be to be racist. I don't know, I just thought that was a bit interesting. So then, of course, she's evil. So she goes down to the kitchen in the morning, even though she's trying to be nice, and she's treating the black people like the help.
You must be hungry.
Yes. Do you have any orange juice?
Pass her the orange juice.
Thank you. I'd also like some rusks, breakfast sausage, scrambled eggs, maybe some brinjal.
If you have it.
We'll be at the playground.
Tell me when you're ready to leave.
Uh-oh, you done pissed her off.
If you don't have sausage, bacon will be fine.
That white bitch telling me to cook breakfast for her. So that's like her big sin, is she wanted breakfast cooked for her. The black woman puts her in her place and tells her she has to eat cereal. Then they decide to go for a drive in the big city. And when they walk out, she knows it's so shocking, because as they're walking out to their car, all the other neighbors are in this ritzy, fancy part of D.C. All of the neighbors are walking out to their cars and gasp. None of them are white. They're all black people. And she's shocked. Oh, my God. How are there? There's all these black people that have enough money to live in this part of town. They're all these fancy blacks.
Morning.
Morning, Piper.
Is everyone in this neighborhood in the government?
No. Dr. Sherman, he's a pediatrician. Mr. and Mrs. Crawford, they're college professors. And Billy's dad. Well, you know Billy, the little goofball with the kazoo. Works at the Pentagon.
Hi. How you doing?
Fine.
Oh, they're all doctors and engineers. Wow. In America, all the black people are doctors and teachers and work at the Pentagon, and one's a senator? Wow, I'm so glad I came to America to find out all the endless opportunities that there are for blacks, if only we gave them a chance. But then, paradoxically, they drive through the shitty part of D.C., which is everywhere. Like, if you live in a super nice part of... This is the one thing that they depicted accurately. If you live in a nice part of D.C., it's inevitably sandwiched between black ghettos. Like, D.C. as a city is essentially a giant black ghetto. And then randomly throughout the giant black ghetto are these little islands of rich people. And so just the ocean between the little islands, it's just a sea of black ghetto-ry. And you have to travel through this ocean of evil to traverse through and go to the different islands of white people. And it is dangerous. It's dangerous. I had to do it every day on my way to work. I had to walk through several blocks of black ghetto of just, you know, urine scented, weed smoke scented alleyways and streets with homeless people, all like not just like, oh, there's one here or there, but like several per block, drunken black. Like, we're talking 10 o'clock in the morning, and there's already drunken black guys drinking 40s and straight out of a movie, like 40s in a brown bag, sitting at a card table playing dominoes. Like, for real, this shit was going on, getting high, people passed out, fights breaking out at the McDonald's. Like, that was every morning on my way to work and every night on my way home from work. And that's, and throughout the day, I took the metro to where my office was, which was kind of down by, closer to the Capitol. And then when I had to go to lunch, or if I had a meeting with someone else in the city, you know, somewhere else in the city, which often happened, same thing. And then the metro itself was a nightmare, because the metro was like a moving, or it was like the rivers. It was rivers of black ghetto as opposed to the ocean up on the surface. It was underground rivers of black ghetto, and there really was no escaping that. You know, you get into the metro, and it's just luck of the draw. It's like you hope you don't get in the metro car where you're going to be assaulted by, for no reason, by some random crazed black person. Because that would just happen, and people would see it happen. No one would stop it. You know, that people didn't want to get involved. And so you would just see shit like that happen from time to time, or maybe some passed out homeless black guy shitting and pissing himself all over the fucking metro car. Like every day, something like that you're seeing on your way to wherever you're going. Doesn't matter where you could be going to the store to get food. You could go into work, coming home from work, going out to the bars at night. It's just a big shit show. But there are these little pockets. There's these little pockets of wealthy people. And those little pockets are relatively safe, or at least safer. I'll tell you what, if it's somewhere where anyone in the federal government lives, you know, if it's like an actual nicer neighborhood, which those are usually not in the middle of the city, then yeah, the cops patrol those a little bit better. So in this scene, it's a little interesting that they, right after trying to explain that, oh, look, in America, all the black people are like the Cosbys, you know, they're like doctors and engineers and, you know, the Pentagon guy or whatever. But then they drive through the black ghetto. And I guess this is because D.C. is not unique. D.C. is not unique in this way where you have like the ocean of black ghetto. I mean, it's extra bad, I would say, in D.C., but most major cities have some form of that. And maybe it's not blacks always, right? Like you could say, you know, when I lived in Albuquerque, it was the same scenario, only it was an ocean of Mexican poverty and crime, with little white islands peppered throughout. And it was the same thing was true. You might be in this super nice neighborhood with mansions and everything, and then you go three blocks this way, and it's fucking gang fights. And so many major cities throughout the United States have this kind of a problem. And I guess that if you're an upper middle class white kid, there's a high potential that you live in one of these white islands, and that you yourself are aware of the ocean of black crime. And so they had to address it. And this is how they chose to address it. I like how he's not even playing the guitar. he's just moving his hand by the strings. Like, why have that close up if you're gonna just do that? Like, at least strum the strings anyway.
I imagine it does.
Sure, a lot different from where you live.
Oh, America isn't perfect, Mari. We still have our problems to work out as well.
Oh, that's okay, honey. He just wants to wash the windshield.
Oh, it's okay, honey. It's just a crazed black man. No, it's not okay. It's not okay. So the white girl from South Africa reacts properly. And I don't get why they would try to say, oh, no, it's fine. No, it's we like it when no one liked that. No one, not even black people. No one liked it when homeless guys ran up and started trying to wash your windshield and then demand money for it. Literally nobody liked that. So it was a weird choice to be like, oh, no, look, it's fine.
Window washer?
Well, it is today.
And does this pass say window washer?
What pass?
She means identity and movement pass. Blacks in South Africa have to carry ID cards that state their occupation and where they're allowed to travel to work.
Yeah, you know what? This is something that was probably saved a lot of lives. Basically, this is something, in fact, that's part of why they kept doing it for so long. It's a policy that began in the 1700s because you couldn't trust, especially men, because this policy exclusively applied to men, at least for the first few centuries that they had it. In fact, they tried to apply it to women, I think in the 1920s and again in the 1950s, and there were protests. They couldn't do it. But the policy was, if you were a black male traveling, especially through, you know, anywhere where white people lived, you had to have what would amount to, I guess, a hall pass to prove who you were and why you were doing that. And that was a result of needing to keep track of people that potentially posed a threat to those neighborhoods. So if you had a black man just wandering through a neighborhood that posed enough of a threat on a regular basis, a threat to property and to white lives, that white people found it necessary to require black men that were traveling through white neighborhoods to have a pass with them. And look, and it's funny, I'm actually surprised they didn't try to make the comparison to like the gold stars that Hitler made the Jews wear, you know. But I am actually okay with these policies. It's like when I was on Elijah Schaefer's show and he's like, well, we're not saying that. Not like any of Hitler's policies were good. And I was like, actually, I said, you know, like I'm actually okay with the gold star thing. Because it is very similar and it serves a similar purpose, that if you need to have some way of identifying outsiders, if you want to protect your people. I mean, I think it's a good compromise. It's a good compromise. Okay, if you must be in proximity to us, as so many people all around the world must, they must for some reason be around white people, Jews included. If you must be around us, you have to, as much as you hate us and you bitch about us endlessly, you just have to live around us. You know, you can't go live around yourselves, right? Like, you know, Ben Shapiro included, like, you love Israel so much, but you can't fucking move there for some reason. You just have to fucking live here, right? If that's going to be the thing you're going to do, okay. I think we're allowed to set some ground rules. In fact, I think that we'd be crazy not to. I think we would be very crazy. In fact, I think it would be negligent of us to not have some kind of ground rules that dictate the terms of you traveling through our neighborhoods. If look, and by the way, fuck you for complaining. You should be kissing our ass that we're even letting you be here. No one's making you be here. So if you must be here, them's the rules. It's too dangerous to let black people just wander about on their own. And so they had these rules about black people. Oh my God, they had to have identification, as if this was some kind of dehumanizing thing. And really, that if anything, it probably prevented law enforcement from assuming negative things about you. Like if you know you're so afraid of, oh, I'm just getting arrested because I'm a black man minding my own business. Well, if that's what your past says, then you're fine. So what big fucking deal? Get over it. You had to have a pass with you. So, of course, they make this big deal out of that policy, making it sound like, again, I'm surprised they didn't bring up the Jewish gold stars, but that's basically what they do.
No way. What's it for?
To help the police keep track of them.
Keep track of who?
Flex.
Why?
Why?
Why? Yeah, I can't imagine why. That's like the dumbest question I've ever heard. I like that. I almost want to clip that too.
Flex. Why? Why?
Why? What are you talking about? Why? So then she goes to the mall, and she's surprised that there's all these black people everywhere at the mall in D.C.
Are all shopping malls in America like this?
Well, some are larger, some smaller, but mostly the same. Lots of stores and lots of walking.
But like this? People just shopping together? Going into stores, blacks and whites? That's allowed.
Bro, it's all not serious. Got a good video too.
It's against the law for a store owner to stop somebody from coming into their store just because of their race.
And good thing, too. See, in America, you silly South Africans, can't you see? We've learned from Martin Luther King that we can't let people prevent blacks from being in their shopping malls. That's why every shopping mall these days is overrun with blacks, and no one goes there unless they want to be assaulted. And by the way, that's gone on for a long time. People talk about the death of the shopping mall as a result of the internet. And sure, I'm sure that's had some effect, but holy shit. This was beginning in the 90s. Even when I was a kid in the 90s, going to the mall meant you were running the risk. You were running some malls more than others, but any mall, you were running the risk that you were going to see some gangster shit. Because that's where the gangster kids would hang out, because they were shoplifting and committing crime all day at the mall and fighting. But, you know, South Africa needs to learn from us. We are more enlightened and more educated about the black man. And don't they understand that if they just allowed the black people to shop at their malls with them, then they totally wouldn't loot every store except the bookstore. So they do a montage of her getting along with the black girl, and now they're getting to be friends, and they're trying on outfits and shit, and it's all fun. And then they do a kind of a version of what happened in South Africa. So she can see the major difference between the attitudes of whites and blacks in America versus the attitudes in her evil country back home.
Sir, okay. Really, I'm sorry, really.
Hey, it's not your fault.
Can I get you something?
Yeah. One of these chocolate sundaes, pretty good.
Ho, ho, ho! Hey, ho, ho! Don't worry. Don't worry, Negro. Ho, ho, how about you get me one of them chocolate sundaes? Tastes pretty good. take it from me, albino McWhitey. So she's like, wow, Americans are so much cooler. Man, look at that. In my country, they would have flipped the fuck out and called him a kaffir and kicked his ass up and down the fucking escalator. And then he wouldn't work in that mall ever again. But not here in America. No, sir. Here in America, the white people love it when black people dump ice cream on their lap. They're just like, ho, ho, you silly Negro. Oh, you always get into these antics. Good thing, if it wasn't for the rap music and the basketball, I might be mad. But, you know, hey, you guys are so, so vital to our culture. So she's learning little by little all about this enlightened state of the Americans.
We've got 15 nations lined up so far for the Pan-African Festival. We're waiting to hear from Morocco, Egypt, and Tanzania.
How are we coming with permits?
Fire, police, sanitation, all in.
All right.
you've got a call, Mr. Dellums.
Take a message, please.
It's the South African Embassy.
Put it through. Hello?
Ron Dellums.
This is he. Who is this?
Oh, no, it's the evil South African Embassy that was mad to or angry with Joe Pesci and that retarded communist black guy.
Genevieve Hoffmeyer of the South African Embassy.
What can I do for you, Miss Hoffmeyer?
Mrs. And I'm calling to confirm that you're hosting a South African student by the name of Mari Bok.
My family is, yes. Why, is that against one of your laws, Mrs. Hoffmeyer?
No, Mr. Dellums.
Congressman.
Congressman. We just like to keep track of our nationals, especially the children.
And I thought that's what parents were for.
Thank you for your time, Congressman.
While I have you on the phone, maybe you can give me some information about a Stephen Biko you're hosting in one of your jails.
I'll forward your request to the ambassador, Congressman. Good afternoon.
Oh, those dirty South Africans worried about their kids staying with a communist black guy. I mean, he's literally a communist black guy. And if her parents knew, they would not want that to be taking place. But anyway, so yeah, evil South Africans. Meanwhile, she's bonding with the black girl.
School changed the dress code over the summer.
Your school? I'm going to your school.
Yeah, where'd you think you're going?
Not to Bantu school.
What?
What?
Bantu. You call the school Bantu. Does that mean nigger?
Not a little bit. not quite, but... So she's shocked, as well she should be, that blacks and whites go to the same school. But didn't you guys know? I mean, if there's anything you've learned by watching the Insomnia stream, yeah, the Americans are enlightened on that topic too. We started letting all the black kids and white kids go to school at the same schools, and it made everything better. Made everything better. You know, as we all know, black test scores are right up there with white people now. Their IQ scores are right up there with white. All it took was a little proximity. And with zero blowback at whatsoever. And no collateral damage in the form of dead white kids at all. None of that. It's never happened. It was all just the deranged nightmare fantasies of irrational racists to ever think that somehow combining white kids and black kids in the same schools would somehow have any kind of effect, negative effect on the quality of the education or the safety of the white children. I mean, that was all just, it was just all crazy, crazy delusions, fever dreams. And so, you know, South Africa, you need to learn. You need to learn from us. You need to learn from us that it's going to be fine. And so she's like, I can't believe you just call me a nigger.
No, in Afrikaans, Bantu means negro or black. Kappa means nigger, which I'd never say. You'd be Bantu in my country, maybe even colored, never Kaffir. At least not to me. Kaffir, Bantu, colored, they all mean black people? Well, not colored technically. How many different words do they have for whites? Just white.
Oh, like that's some kind of... That means that you're bad because there's only one word for it? What are you talking about? And as if the Africans, the black Africans in South Africa don't have a whole lot of words for white people. Anyway, so that's somehow some kind of own because there's only one word for white people. And then she tells her black communist parents that about the new racial words she learned today.
They've got all these different classifications for people. You know, like whites or Asians, coloreds. We'd be Bantu. Or did she say I was a Kaffir?
Mari called you a Kaffir?
She called you a Kaffir.
Maybe I'm getting it mixed up.
That's it. The embassy can have her back.
No, wait. I think I got it wrong.
Wrong?
She said Bantu, Daddy, not Kaffir. Kaffir's a bad one. Bantu just means black.
I know what they mean.
I know what that bitch meant. I know what she meant. I know what she called us. I should have had this loaded up.
Yeah. Motherfucker. What's up, nigga? Gangsta rap, nigga. Nigga. Nigga, 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 nigga. I'm 100% nigga. Nigga, 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 nigga. I'm 200% nigga.
So he's all, damn that bitch. Call me a nigga. Call my daughter a nigga again. I'll whoop that ass. But then the daughter's like, no, no, it's cool. She said Bantu, and Bantu's like, not as bad or something. So that night, so he's like, he's like, all right. I'll get that white bitch next time. So the white South African girl goes downstairs at night. She's totally clueless of the imminent danger that, that she was facing. Finds, of course, Roots! Oh, look at this. This is this book on the table. Ah, interesting. I'm going to read this book called Roots. Hopefully it's about roots. Ah, the saga of an American family. Ah, I'll have to... This is probably light reading. I'm going to sit here on the couch and read this Roots book.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's... Okay, you can
read. I was about to beat your ass, like, literally 20 minutes ago. But, no, it's cool. Bitch, be cool.
I thought I heard something out here and just came to check. Go on, sit. What are you reading? Oh, Roots. Good book. Important book here in the U.S. It helped Americans, white Americans, see the horror of slavery.
You hear that, bitch? Better read that book, Roots. It helped the white people learn how bad they were. And for all the illiterate whites that were never going to read our book, we made it into this super long TV miniseries that had wall-to-wall advertising because, again, like I said, it's endless. It's endless. The propaganda on your enemy's propaganda is endless. That's just yet another example. The book Roots, which, by the way, was passed off as like some real story and subsequently debunked, obviously, as mostly bullshit. But, they pushed it off to white, the white boomers as the primer for the average black man's horrible history at the hands of the violent, evil white people. So, make sure she reads Roots. And look, by the way, this is also, who's the audience in 2000s? Little white kids. Little white kids are going to go, oh, I should read Roots, I guess.
I don't think you're a bad person, Mari. I just think you've been taught some bad things.
Bad things, like wanting to be safe from people like me. So at school, she's all freaked out because there's all these black kids. And look, some of them are actually violent towards her a little bit. They try to make it not seem like a big deal. Then she gets told she has to do a book report. And just by coincidence, wouldn't you know, by coincidence, it's a book about South Africa called Cry, the Beloved Country by communist Alan Paton. Another book that they're trying to get the kids at home to read. And this was basically a book trying to make, it was like, I guess you could say it was like Roots for South Africa. It was a book trying to get South Africans to feel guilty about not letting black people live with them. And it was a book to make the rest of the world look at South Africa as a bunch of evil racists. So she has to do a book report on that.
This book was required reading at my high school. Ooh, Peyton, he was pretty famous over here.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Wouldn't you know, the black communist lady just happened to have a copy, which is actually probably very realistic that she would have just happen to have a copy. So they're just, you know, throwing in some more reading recommendations there for the kids at home, or the parents maybe watching along with them. So she starts reading the book. She's reading the book, and she's shocked at what she's reading. Oh, my God. Why have I never heard this stuff before?
To be honest, I've never even heard of it before.
You're kidding. A book about your own country written by one of your most famous authors?
Well, he might be famous here, but not in South Africa. It's probably banned.
Banned?
Yeah. There are certain books, movies, people, even TV shows that we're not allowed to see.
Who, the kids?
No, everyone.
Well, who's stopping you?
The government.
Why?
To protect us.
From what?
Protect us from what? Yes. Good thing they stopped protecting them. Oh yeah, all their fears were just unfounded racist fantasies.
Shoot to kill, Kamaza, kill the poor, the farmer, kill the poor, the farmer. Brr, pa, pa, brr, pa.
Protect you against what? Against what exactly? You stupid white hoe. So they have more montages of them being friends and dancing around the park, and everything's nice and shiny, happy people holding hands, until the evil white South Africans from the embassy show up to take her away, because they've figured out that that there's going to be some political unrest, possibly protest in America, because of the incarceration of that black terrorist, Steve Biko, or whatever the fuck his name was. What was it? Biko, whatever. That fucking Kaffir. And so they come to scoop her up and take her to safety, but, you know, they're, of course, evil.
How did they treat you?
Who? Family child, the Dellums.
Fine. They're treating me fine. What's going on?
You're leaving.
What?
Gather your things.
But I don't want to go.
You are a minor, young lady, and as such, you have no authority to make that decision.
Do my parents know about this?
We will notify them when we get to the embassy. Pack your things. You won't be coming back.
Pack your things. So they go through these protest lines on the way to the embassy, and they show up, and she's like, what's going on? Why are all these people freaking the fuck out? And the people at the embassy try to explain what's going on.
Anything I can get you, Mari?
No, but you could tell me what's going on.
The fool's just off and killed himself.
Who?
Biko, the terrorist. He's killed himself, and the Americans have gone daft over it. They've been out there all day.
Why would he kill himself?
Who knows how they think? Maybe he fashioned himself a martyr. The fact is, he's dead. And the world is carrying on as though we're responsible. That's why we thought we'd best get you out of that house. There's no telling how they would react.
Who's they?
Those people you were staying with.
What people?
What do you mean, those people? I've already been indoctrinated. I've only been here like a week, and I've already been fully indoctrinated by the American propaganda. So the real life story behind what they're talking about is Steve Biko, the black communist that we discussed at the beginning, died in custody. Now, there's some different versions of events. initially the government said that he was doing a hunger strike and died as a result of that. The supporters of Steve Biko said that he was murdered. I would say it's probably something a little bit in the middle. I think he was doing a hunger strike, and I think they were interrogating him, and I think they got a little rough, and in fact, they did have some kind of disclosure at some point where the people who the officers interrogating him said they beat him up a little bit. I don't know. I don't know enough about that topic specifically, and I couldn't research it thoroughly enough to go one way or another on it. Either way, doesn't really matter. He was dead, and that he became a martyr at that point. It created a political situation in the United States and the rest of the world where now they were framing it, regardless of what actually happened, as the white South Africans now taking activists into custody and just murdering them and executing them without a trial. And again, I don't know. I mean, look, it. On one hand, it's kind of like you want to say, well, even if they did, is it, oh my God, big loss, right? Especially knowing what we know now, like knowing what it led, what his hopes and dreams were inevitably going, where that road was headed or guiding people towards, the reality that we have today. On the other hand, it's also kind of like, well, I mean, politically speaking, is he more dangerous as a martyr? You know, was it maybe the smartest thing to make him into a martyr if that's what happened? I mean, I don't know. But that's what they're referencing. So, of course, the communist black American senator or congressman is now feverishly working with his entire. If you notice, that's the other thing that isn't supposed to make you go is that everyone that works with this guy is black. It's okay for him to have racial solidarity. It's okay. It's not okay for the malls to say black people can't shop here, but it is okay for him to say only black people can work in my office unless I think he has like a white blonde secretary just so he can, of course, give orders to a white woman or something. But yeah, everyone in his office is black, and which is statistically impossible if you're looking at who's overrepresented, as Jews are often or used to often be fond of pointing out.
We're working on it right now.
It's official. Amnesty International just confirmed that Biko didn't kill himself. He died from injuries from being beaten by the police.
Well, if Amnesty International says so.
South African news organizations.
See the government trying to wiggle the way out of this one.
Biko was not there.
Fire services reporting demonstrations at South African embassies all over the world.
What about the U.S. press? They're still playing Steno Evil?
Not anymore.
President Carter. Stephen Biko was a popular and charismatic activist for human rights for the disenfranchised black majority in South Africa. His suspicious death has sparked mass demonstrations on college campuses in New York, California, Georgia, New Jersey, and here at the nation's capital.
So far, took this to finally get their attention.
And now that we have it, we need to run with it.
Now we can strike against the white man in South Africa. So they start using him as a martyr for the cause.
During the morning, a crowd gathered outside the courthouse, giving the Black Power salute, shouting, "What have they done? And power is ours."
Oh, great. I'm sure that's not headed anywhere horrific. And then he uses his power as a congressman to muscle the embassy into giving him the white girl that now apparently he must have. Like before, he didn't want a little racist white girl living at his house, but now he has to have her living at his house and says that, well, if you don't, then I'm going to give you some bad PR. And so the embassy relents and releases her back to him. And she gets home and she's all excited to be back with her fun black family.
I still don't know what all that craziness was about.
Stephen Biko.
Yeah, Biko. Who cares? Just some crazy terrorist who killed himself.
Anyone who knows right from wrong would care. And Biko didn't kill himself. The police killed him.
Who told you that?
The whole world knows it. Just turn on the news. The South African police beat him and tried to hide it when he died. Pigs!
The police are not pigs! My father is not a pig!
Oh yeah? Then why don't you ask him how Biko died?
I don't have to ask him! This Biko was a common criminal. You Americans would call him a thug.
Well, whatever you want to call him, he was a man fighting for justice. Just like my father. And you know, if I was Biko's daughter...
You don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what it's like being outnumbered by what? Black people?
Sofaskichi!
Yes, by black people. White South Africans. 9% of the population. 9% of the population.
Who has it all wrong? Me and the rest of the world, Mari? Or you and your racist South African people?
You and the rest of the world, actually. You and the rest of the world. 9% of the population. 9. Now do you understand why you needed those laws? 9. Why was it so important that all the other 91% of the population just had to be around that 9%? Had to. And here we are just a few decades later.
Pa! Brr, pa! Pa!
Gee, I wonder why. I wonder why they need those rules. So she goes outside and she's crying because she's realizing that she lives in a racist country and the Americans don't think she's cool because she's racist. And the black man comes out to say, oh, it's okay. It's just, you know, it's just everyone in your country that's racist, not you.
You can't help what your government does, Mari.
It's not my government that wouldn't allow it.
You're talking about your friends and neighbors? Well, their attitude about blacks is still the fault of your government. Everyone was raised the same, as were their parents before them. It's a nasty cycle. It has to be stopped. Here in America, we had to learn the exact same lesson. Now it's South Africa's time.
Now it's your turn, bitches. America had to learn the exact same lesson. And the fucked up thing is, we had to learn the same lesson with it's only 13% of the population here. Only 13%. Can you guys... I don't think American whites can quite wrap their head around that. 13% of the population in America is black, and they cause the amount of problems that they cause. In South Africa, it's 90. 90. Remember the stream we did about Bessemer? I think Bessemer is like 90% white. Imagine if the whole country was Bessemer. For those of you who haven't seen the stream, Bessemer is this small town that's 90% black. It's just outside of, I think, St. Louis. And it's basically hell on earth. It's hell on earth. South Africa is an entire nation of Bessemer. But hey, look, it's the year 2000. We just finished up the wonderful 90s where racism was solved and everything. And America learned its lesson. And now it's South Africa's turn. Oh, I think they... You think they learned the lesson yet? So then, of course, the real preachy part happens at the end, as is often the way with these propaganda pieces. After they've done the passion play, you know, for you. They performed the play. Now, just in case you're one of the stupid kids watching that didn't get it, because you know the narrative didn't soak in enough. They spell it out for you at the end. She goes to some African festival that her new black daddy is putting on, and he does this big speech in front of, you know, dressed up like Kunta Kinte over here, and this is the big you know, I've learned something today thing.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt, one of America's greatest presidents, said more than 30 years ago that he looked forward to a world founded on four essential human freedoms. The freedom of speech, the freedom to worship God in your own way, the freedom from want and need, and finally, to be free from fear. These freedoms should be universal, but there are places in the world where they are just dreams for the millions of those who cry for them. I have a friend, a new friend from South Africa. And this friend recently told me a story about a unique bird found in her country. And what is remarkable about this bird is not that
birds
nest, but that this particular bird nests in a community of families all unrelated to each other and all of different colors. This community of different colored, unrelated birds live together with one common goal: to care for each other. We are a world of people, not races, not ethnic groups, not census descriptions on pieces of paper, but living, breathing human beings.
And not birds either.
And if there's one thing that human beings have in common, it's the desperate need to be free.
We miss you already, honey. I miss you.
Aww. And so she learned how to be a nice little American girl, and she flies back to South Africa, and the first thing she does, not embrace her evil, you know, fascist cop dad, who you don't even see for the rest of the movie, or her mother, or even her little brother. It, she runs over to her mammy, her black, she finally learned, oh, now I realize how horrible it is for black people. I'm sorry, I never knew before, but, and then she even shows, like, she does, like, the secret, look at that! Remember that secret flag that you had? The secret, you know, black power flag? Look at me, I'm a real American white woman now, I got the, that's right, I'm secretly undermining my own people. Look at the flag, see, I'm on your team now, mammy. And she runs in the house and gets that fucking bird they can't shut up about, and throws it in the air so he can go live with all the other different races of birds, like the magical South African birds that apparently live in harmony or something. And then that's the end. Yeah, it says the first free elections in the history of South Africa took place in April of 1994. The Delhams family was there. How'd that work out? Here we are, 25 years later. Didn't take long. How did that work out? This movie seems kind of fucking retarded now, doesn't it? Anyway, so I don't know, like I said, not a super long one, although we're almost at 2 hours. I'm pretty worn out today. Worn out. Been streaming now today. Well, like for, like, this is four hours today. All day long today. For me, at least. Anyway, let's go ahead and take a look at entropy. The entropy chance. It's acting weird today. It's not doing it the way that it used to. Hopefully, it doesn't mean I'm going to miss any of them. It's not listing. It's not important to you guys, but like the way it used to list them, it used to separate out normal chats from the super chats, and it's not doing that today. Hopefully, I don't miss any. Is bottom line. Check Bro says, hi Devin, watching since the days of YouTube, recommending your channel to me while watching Sargon. Yeah, Sargon, who has now blocked me. Oh, how times have changed. Has now blocked me, and yeah. I learned so much about movies and the USA. I can't thank enough for your effort. Guys, please play Simbi's Escape from Buchanan. And give him feedback. Some of us from the audience did work on the game. You know, I tried to download it. I went to Simbi's website. I actually didn't see the link for it. Or at least, I clicked around. I didn't see anything. So, maybe we can get a... I'll take a look at it. I'll take a look at it if I get a link to it. But, need a link for it. All right. Yid Meyer says, John Demjanjuk was a Ukrainian living in America that a random Jew identified as Ivan the Terrible. Without any proof, he was stripped of his citizenship, deported to Israel, and given the death penalty. Turns out he wasn't Ivan the Terrible, but he was a Treblinka guard. By the way, most of these types of guys were Slavs, but we don't see that in the media because it doesn't fit their narrative. Yeah, well, no shocker there. Israelis crying Nazi and then murdering people. And given a free pass facilitated by the Americans. You're welcome, the rest of the world. You're welcome, South Africa. Maroon's Dragon? Maroon's Dragon!
When you're trying to save money, a good rule to follow is to...
Take it from me, Jim Neighbors, it'll pay dividends.
Maroon's Dragon simply expresses his dislike for the kefir. Well, I appreciate the support there. Maroon's... Oh, no, it's Dagon, not Dragon. Dagon? I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but I appreciate the support nonetheless. And then with some gigantic Christmas dono, we got Penelope Maynard, always a big supporter of the show.
Children, today we'll be reading the best Christmas ever. Our story begins with...
The Magic Negro.
Christmas tree.
Where did the snowman go?
The best Christmas ever.
All right, Penelope Maynard, which, by the way, I regret to inform you. Sadly, Penelope, the Penelope Maynard Hive did not survive the winter. It was Saskatraz bees that did not, if they did, they left. They absconded at some point. They are not in the hive. However, because that is one of the hives that is around people, it will be restocked with a package of European bees that will be showing up next month. They'll be Italians this time around. But yes, there was a Penelope Maynard hive, and it sadly did not make it Sadly did not make it. Wouldn't you know it, the African neighbors did. Their African neighbors did fine. But thank you very much, Penelope, for the big support. Always been a very generous supporter of the show. And I also noticed that you were generous to Mark Collette as well today when I was on with him earlier. And so I appreciate that. He's a good guy. So, yeah, big 07s in chat for Penelope Maynard and her patronage. All right, then we got Man of Low Moral Fiber, who just says, this shit is mad gay. Yes, it is. I guess that is an accurate way to describe the show. And then we got Man of Low Moral Fiber again says, tell them about how some of the DC Negroes do jungle gym shit in the trains, swinging around like fucking monkeys, and then asking for money and tribute for their stinky and dangerous calisthenics. Yeah, it's inevitable. I guess it's the evolved version of running out and then making your windshield dirtier and then demanding money. Same sort. This is not just in DC. This is every major city. You'll have young African kids that are military-aged African kids that'll go on to public transportation and then threateningly jostle about for a moment with to the sound of horrible music and then demand money as if like they did something for you. Many such occasions there. Then speaking of Bessemer, we got Bessemer. I said we got Bessemer.
Wise money management.
Where's the rest?
Thank you.
Bessemer says, hi, Devin. Thanks for the show. Well, you're welcome. And, yeah, like I said, I was almost not going to do it tonight, but glad I did. Glad I did. And we'll, of course, have a show on Saturday. The show must always go on. I always feel like it's consistency is the key. So as much as I can, I try to always be here. And I appreciate you guys always being here. Man of Low Moral Fiber says that little negress is hideous and a bad actress. It's Disney Channel. Like I said, I think they picked the whitest looking black chick they could to convey the message more thoroughly. Oh, by the way, you think she was a bad actress. The little black kids that are supposed to be her little brother and her little brother and his friend who are like 50 shades darker than she is. You want to see bad acting? I didn't clip it, but they have like a few lines and it's just like, good Lord. You know, that's not even the first take, and that's the take that they chose out of all of them. Let's see here. Then we got, I think it's Alt CPA, perhaps? Alt CPA? Alt CPA, newly awakened Gen Xer. I've been going over your previous streams. I noticed you mentioned the need to find attorneys to help the cause. What do you need us to do exactly? No, I mean, just generally, we need people that are in law because of the, well, I mean, there's also, obviously, there's very specific cases where, in the case where you have censorship, whether it's deplatforming, whether it's people banning books. I mean, you don't hear about that happening as frequently now, and maybe it's not happening as frequently, but it's still happening. You know, speaking of Mark Collette, he's still banned from Twitter for who knows why. But you have, you know, that sort of a thing going on. There's lots of, look, the bottom line is we don't have endless lawyers to wage lawfare against our enemies or to defend our people when the lawfare is being waged against them. We don't have nonprofits set up to support our people legally, whereas the Jews and other competing groups have lots of these groups. If you're a lawyer and you've got the resources and the know-how, maybe looking into creating such a group. And I think that eventually that's the sort of thing we're going to need to advocate for, especially as our demographic shift in this country. And instead of just being, having a bunch of hostile minority groups advocating against our interests. So, right now, we don't have any legal advocates for white people. It just doesn't exist, and the need for that is going to just increase as the ratio changes, and not just here in America. I mean, look, hopefully we don't get to 9% like South Africa anytime soon, but we're gonna be dropping. We're already below 50%. And we need to have legal representation. Now, I think, though, on another note, speaking of the lawyer thing, I honestly think AI, because I was thinking about this the other day, I was like, you know, out of all the jobs that AI is going to be actually do a pretty good job of making redundant and replacing it to some degree. I mean, it won't make lawyers obsolete, but it'll make some of the things that lawyers do obsolete. Because if you think about it, the only reason why lawyers exist is the law is overly complicated and set up in such a way that the average person, when forced into a situation where they have to interface with the legal system, they're in over their heads. It doesn't matter if you're a really smart person or not. It's such a complicated mess that even to do simple things, it's you need to pay someone else to guide you through it. And I think that AI can actually make the law more accessible to maybe not so much the average person, but the above average person, which is to say a lot of white people. I think that's going to be one of the good uses for AI because look, you can think of it this way. Even lawyers would be crazy not to be using AI to do legal research. Because now it used to be you'd have to say to a bunch of interns, hey, go through like that basement full of books and try to find some law, some obscure law that we can use against, you know, our opponents here or to excuse our whoever we're representing their behavior. Now you don't have to do that. Now you can just ask AI. You can just say, hey, this is the jurisdiction, and I want to know 100%, or some kind of legal loophole that would allow me to accomplish this, or some kind of legal defense against that. And you'll get maybe not any discernment out of the response from AI, but you'll get the data that you would normally have to pay someone, you know, $250 or more an hour to give you the same advice. So I think that's going to change the game a little bit. That's going to make the law more accessible, but we're still going to need lawyers, and we're still going to, because, you know, AI is not going to go file things for you. It'll tell you how to file. It'll tell you where to file and what to file. But it's still like a full-time, because the legal system sucks so bad, it's still kind of like a full-time job to some degree. I don't know. I think that, if you have that kind of a background, you've got a law license, and I guess that's going to be another thing that AI is not going to have, you know, it's not going to have a license to practice. So that'll be a hurdle too. But I think that if you've got that license and you've got that background, you should look into creating some kind of a legal foundation or some way of helping out white people with legal situations. And it could range anywhere from, censorship to, maybe not so distant future, the FBI arresting people for anti-Semitism. We're going to need lawyers for that. That's going to be a situation where you're not going to have any Jewish legal nonprofit swooping in. You know, ACLU won't matter. No one's going to swoop in and help a white nationalist that gets charged with an anti-Semitism law. And not a lot of regular lawyers you're probably going to get stuck with a public defender. In fact, that's usually the case. Anytime a white nationalist gets into legal trouble, you can't even set up a GoFundMe because they'll shut it down. So you can't raise money. You're kind of just fucked. And so maybe creating some kind of legal relief for people like that would be something for you to look into. But glad you've woken up there, Alt-CPA. Man of Low Moral Fiber says, what did the Negroes do in South Africa that showed they were mature enough to vote? It seemed like they were just nigging around. Why did the whites allow them to vote? Well, because of economic and political pressure from around the world, including from the United States, but really from everywhere. To be honest, I don't know the history as well as perhaps I should, but I remember the propaganda. Like I said, I remember watching South Africans portrayed in American movies as just these evil racists, and that's all most people in the West knew of South Africa. And it made it politically and financially hard enough for them to finally give in, and look where they are now. All right, going over to Rumble. Let's see here. We got D. Mitch. D. Mitch says, I love how they say whites stole all the resources from Africa, the same resources that would stay in the ground for the next 5 million years, since they have no technology or means of mining them. Well, that's the other thing, too, is if they're... Why is it the most resource-rich continent in the world is the least developed? Tyler W05 says, last stream was captivating. Great story that I would have never heard if it weren't for you. Did you know that Hitler considered America to have some of the best Aryan genetics due to the fact that they were Europeans, smart, courageous enough to come here, who were then put under extreme selective pressures? No hate to any other whites. I love my brothers. Just an interesting fact. Also, Mark Collette is pretty cool. I listened to that stream at work today. Look, I've made the same argument, and I know that, and it's not meant as a slight to non-American Europeans, and it certainly doesn't apply to all Americans, by the way. But I do think there was something special about founding stock Americans because there were unusual selection events and effects at play. And I do believe that my family, my ancestors, were subjected to all of those selection pressures. And I do have a lot of pride in the accomplishments of my ancestors. That said, there's certainly just as many remarkable white people in all the other white countries. We all have our unique histories, but I'm proud. I'm proud of American whites and founding stock Americans in particular, for that exact reason. Let's see here. Oh, and Tyler 005 again says, forgot to say thanks for keeping us educated. I hope you do so for a very long time to come, brother. I plan to save some of your streams onto thumb drives for my children in case something ever happens. Well, that's a good compliment. I really appreciate that. And, I really should archive some of these. There's a lot of these streams I don't have copies of. I mean, they're in the cloud. I should probably get like a drive and at the very least archive all. I mean, I might have some that aren't on the internet, but they're kind of scattered all over because I used to record all of them because especially remember when my internet was really bad and so it would drop out constantly. I recorded locally every stream because if that happened, I could always just upload the recording. But as soon as my internet started working, I stopped doing it because it was filling up all my hard drive space with stream. You know, every stream is like 3 gigabytes and I'm doing twice a week. So, it adds up quick. I really should. I should probably archive this stuff more. D. Mitch says, I love how they say white stole. Oh, wait, we just did that one. Tyler W05. Oh, wait. Why is it doing your guys' thing twice? That's weird. Zazzy McTazbot says, thanks for the show. Well, I appreciate that. And then we've got... Zazie McTazbot again says, I served in the army with a South African whose family sold their pineapple plantation and fled to America due to a sudden labor shortage in 1994. Hope the whites get out before things get too bad. Yeah. Well, I probably would have left South Africa in 1994 as well, if not before then. I understand, though, those that want to stay there. I get it. It's your, you know, that's your heritage. That's your family were under very different, but certainly harsh selection events as well. Selection pressures as well, as you carved a nation out of the continent of Africa surrounded by hostile savages. Scroll down. Oh, we got the Shogun says Christ is king, but in this life, it's race before religion. Religion, like politics, divides us. Race unites us. Yeah, I think that the glue that should be holding us together, look, from a practical standpoint, it would be nice if we had the same advantage that Jews have, in that they not only share an ethnicity, but a religion. I think, generally speaking, that's true of white people. I think that even though there is, especially these days, a suspicion about the value of Christianity and the role it has played possibly in allowing Jewish infiltration and influence to take place. And I know there's like a slight resurgence of paganism and whatnot. I think that ultimately we all share values. I think that we do. White people, you know, whether your family is Mormon or Catholic or Baptist or pagan or whatever, ultimately, I don't think there's a whole lot. If you're right wing and you're white, I don't think there's really a whole lot that differentiates the different groups when it comes to basic values. You know, there might be arguments about dogma. There might be arguments about rituals and traditions and these sorts of things. But ultimately, I don't think there's a whole lot of difference when it comes to how we want to raise our children and the kinds of communities that we want to live in. And I think that what's informing that is our race, is our shared kinship, our blood. I think that's where that comes from. I think that's why the similarity. I think that's why there's not radical differences between right-wing white people when it comes to worldview. And, you know, despite all of our different religious backgrounds and whatnot, there's not a whole lot of difference between how we view the world and the kind of world that we want to have for our future and for our descendants. So, yeah, I think that's what comes first, and that's always what's going to be my priority. Unless somehow unless somehow we make like a cult or have like some like, our white religion that springs up out of somewhere. I mean, I don't know. Maybe, who knows? Maybe I'll find some golden plates in the desert, right? look what I found. There it is. Digging around, and I found these golden plates. Oh, yeah. And then this angel showed up when I was sleeping. It was like, Devin. Hey, God told you need to translate these plates. It warns you about the Jews. I'm like, oh, really? I'm going to translate them. Let me get my hat. All right, so. Ghost Dog Man says, burpa. Fuck the Kaffirs. That's right. Fuck the Kaffirs. Decimal Threat says the cutaway fight scene at the mall was hilarious, although the truth to it made me feel guilty for laughing so hard. Thanks once again for a great show. I appreciate that. But yeah, that's the first thing that popped in my head as I was watching that show, is she's sitting there going, oh, wow, it's so nice that in America, you have the blacks and the whites all shopping at the same mall. And the black lady's like, yeah, it hasn't created any problems at all, ever. And it's like, have you been to a mall? Like, maybe in the 70s. You know, people forget that there was a little bit of a buffer zone. There was a little bit of a buffer zone between whites actually standing up to black people and putting them in their fucking place when necessary, and the cuckery today. Like, there was a little buffer zone where, like, white people were like, all right, we're gonna ease up a little bit. You say that you can coexist with us with the same rights and everything, and we're being propaganda, you know, from morning to noon to night, and we're gonna go on a limb here. We're gonna see how that works out. There was a brief time when, at least in some places, not everywhere, you know, like there was race riots going on almost always, but like in the last century, going back to like the 1950s and stuff around the civil rights movement, especially, there was lots of race riots, you know, burning down cities and all this other shit. But there was a period that when we were like, okay, fine, you know, we're going to give you guys affirmative action and all this other stuff. White people finally give in, give the black people and the Jews literally everything that was on their list of goodies. And it did sort of pacify them a little bit. There was a little bit of a, you know, just like in South Africa, right? Like, I think maybe there was probably like a period where they had to be like, all right, let's be on our best behavior because they let us vote, you know. But it didn't take long. It didn't take long for that all to fall to pieces. And really, just as the Southerners were worried about, like I talked about in that Putman stream, more so than anything else, I mean, aside from the violence, aside from, you know, the actual physical danger that it puts you in when you go out in public and whatnot, it's just the civilization degrading, you know, the culture degrading. It's just that, you know, you can't have that integration without really losing a piece of your soul and your civilization's soul. And it's already happened. It's already gone. And, I mean, look, everyone's seen those viral images on the internet of South Africa, you know, like, oh, here's this strip mall in the year 2000, and here it is in 2025, and it's like, it looks like a fucking atomic bomb went off, right? Or neighborhoods, like, oh, look at this neighborhood, and this is, you know, this was one of the first Google Street images that we have, so it's like from 2002 or whatever, and then here's the day, you know, 20 years later, now it's the same thing, it looks like a fucking war zone. And, you know, that's the unfortunate reality. When you allow blacks to live in your society, it degrades the society, it degrades the civilization, and there's never an example of it not happening. Never. There's not one example of it not happening. And yet, for whatever reason, white people keep getting tricked into rolling the dice on something that really there's no payoff. It's a gamble without a defined win. It's just a gamble for the sake of the gamble. There's no way you win, because best case scenario is you don't get anything, right? I mean, when it comes to integrating blacks into a white society, best case scenario is nothing changes. Like, the best you can hope for is that it just doesn't get worse. So why are you rolling the dice on that? I mean, it's like going to a casino. It's like going to a blackjack table, and the best you can ever do is push. You're not allowed to win. It's like they tell you that at the table. Let's say it's blackjack. It's like, oh yeah, if you hit blackjack, you get to keep your money. And people going, oh, that sounds good. But if I lose, I lose the money, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah, you still lose. But if I win, I don't lose the money. Oh, yeah, that's the rules. All right, sounds good. Let me bet 50 bucks on this table. Because I might not lose it. statistically, I'll lose it, but I might not. maybe it'll stay the same. It's retarded, but that's really, that was the deal. That was the deal that white people were faced with. And they were tricked into doing it. They were tricked into going, yeah, why not? Why not? Well, what's the worst thing? I could lose all my money? Oh, let's do it. Let's fucking do it. Then we got Who's Joe says, a silver lining I want to point out about the white genocide is that whites are not foreign to this concept and have prevailed in the past. I'm Croatian, or a Croat, I guess. Turks occupied for centuries and we still prevailed. Yeah, I get it. And I understand that, and I fully believe that whites will exist and we'll get through it. But as you say, it could be fucking centuries. I don't want my people to be in a situation like that for centuries. But it very well could be the case. In fact, I think it's even, I don't want to say it's likely, but it's not unlikely. It's not unlikely that it is centuries before you have a strong, ethnically conscious, white nation rise out of the ashes of diversity. I mean, it really could take centuries. I hope not. I hope not, but it really could take that long. All right, I'm going to ping-pong back over to Entropy just to make sure I didn't lose anything here. And nope, I think we're good. Unless, like I said, it's acting weird. It's not showing me that. I might have forgot to. You know what it might be? Is I don't think I clicked end stream on the last stream. I think that might have fucked things up. So I got to go. I'll look in the control panel of Entropy, which is not the most intuitive thing, but I'll take a look at that after the show and see if I fucked that up. All right, guys. Well, like I said, a little bit of a short one tonight. I appreciate you guys hanging out here. We got one more from Who's Joe. It says, Zoomer is more conservative now than Silent Generation. Well, I'd say it's polarized. Because Zoomers are also gayer than every generation that ever existed before them. And there's more tranny Zoomers than it. You know what I mean? Like, they're more extreme is what they are. They're more extreme in all directions. You know, you didn't have anyone. The people in the Silent Generation weren't identifying as kittens and whatnot. You know what I mean? Like, you have a lot of mental, a lot of mental illness in Zoomers, and you have a lot of Zoomers responding to the mental illness of their peers. But I think it's a mistake to act as if, as a group, as a whole, that's representative of the full picture when it's not. I think the vast majority of Zoomers are not based. I think that the ones that are more based than many of the other generations, right? But I think that's because they're reacting in an extreme way to their peers who are extreme the other way. All right, guys, that's it. I'm going to go rest my voice. As you can hear, I'm kind of losing my voice now, and hit the sack for a little bit and then get up early in the morning to work on the never ending task of clearing out porn. Actually, most of the porn's taken care of now. I've got now it's just filth. Now it's just filth of the non-pornographic variety. And we got one last one. Who's Joe says, Ed Dutton brought up the idea about Neo-Byzantium regions with holdouts of civilization like Byzantium in the Roman collapse. I think stuff like that will happen. I think there will be, to the extent that it's allowed to happen. And that's kind of what I've talked about with white people making communities. It's a life raft, really, for our civilization. It's kind of like, in a way, it's kind of like the end of Fahrenheit 451, right? Where he goes into the, you know, they banned books or whatever, and he goes into the forest in the end, and lives in that community where everyone is their mission in life is to preserve a book, and because they can't write it down, they've committed it to memory. And in order to preserve it so that when someday they're allowed to have books again, they just recite it all day long. So they're just walking around reciting this entire book that they've memorized, so that they're basically like living USB sticks of these books. I don't think it's obviously not to that extreme, but I think to some extent a lot of our values and traditions and civilization will survive in communities like that, and that'll be the source for that knowledge when we do make our comeback. So anyway, I'm going to roll out. Oh, we got one last one on entropy, and then we're going to roll out of here. Shambolics!
Little baby platypus
says, gotta say, Penelope Maynard's place in Valhalla is secured. Shout out to her and all the other supply line heroes keeping the front lines strong. And I second that. And like I said, I'm it's been a resupply. I'm going to be resupplying her hive with some bees. And I was going to take photo because I have a couple other hives that you guys, some of the big supporters got. So I got to take some photos of these hives so you know that they exist. Although I think all the European ones died. There's still one yard I haven't got to. But I'm sure it's not pretty. Once I get over there, I'll find out. All right, guys. Hope you guys all have a good rest of your evening or morning or afternoon. And I will see you again here on Saturday. Same bat time, same bat channel. In the meantime, I am, of course, for Blackpilled, Devin Stack.
Looks so nice. Hello, Daddy.
Hi,
if you don't stop him from raping her, who will? Find your strength.